You are listening to the GeoNiagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.
Welcome to Episode 6 of the GeoNiagara Radio Show.
This will be the last episode of our first season.
Joining us on this episode of the GeoNiagara Radio Show is Dr. Marilyn Jolyneau, professor in the Geography and Tourism Studies Department at Brock University. And it's such an honor to have her on the show. Personally, she's had a tremendous impact in my life in terms of being an educator. Some of you might not know that I returned to university later in life and that meeting Marilyn was kind of a life-changing experience.
She's a great encourager and she makes learning a lot of fun with her energy and her enthusiasm about all things geography and especially in the topic of remote sensing. So we're extremely grateful to have her joining us for our last episode of the season. And we hope you enjoy.
She definitely does not make an 8 a.m. class feel like an 8 a.m. class.
Definitely not.
You want to be in that classroom with her because she's so passionate about the subjects that she teaches. And we hope that passion comes through during the interview. At this time, I'd like to welcome Dr. Marilyn Jolyneau to the studio. She is an associate professor of geography in Brock University's Department of Geography and Tourism Studies. And her expertise is environmental applications of geospatial technologies, which includes remote sensing. And that's pretty interesting because our last episode, we also had a remote sensing specialist, Travis. So welcome to the studio, Marilyn. Pleasure to have you here for our final episode of this season.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being invited to the show. And so I plan for a fun evening.
So first off, can you tell us about your educational path from where you started in sort of where your passion came from in remote sensing and sort of your educational path to where you are now as professor at Brock?
Sure. So I guess I'm going to have to go back a few years to when I was a kid growing up in Ottawa and having a dad who was really excited about the environment and cared a lot actually about the environment. And so he would take myself and my three older sisters and we would traipse around wetlands. For those who know Ottawa, the southern part of Ottawa has some wetlands there that we used to walk through. And my dad had an interest in geography. So he taught me a lot about the world around us and what lives in wetlands and why we shouldn't use them as waste disposal sites, etc. And that, I guess, is what started me thinking about the environment and having an interest in, you know, where things are located and where things aren't located and why that's the case. So I, of course, you know, went to school, elementary school, and then on to high school where I took courses in geography, and back then we called them different things, but world studies, for example. But I took an interest when I had really good high school teachers teaching geography. And then I decided, you know, well, I think I would like to continue with this educational path, but my parents didn't actually have a lot of money. So I worked three jobs and thought, well, I'm going to pay for my own education and pursue an undergraduate degree at Carleton University. So that's what I did. I applied to their program in geography and started there as a first year undergraduate student. And I very quickly learned that I really had a love for geography. So I took courses in human geography, where we focused on understanding how humans interact with their environment. And then I took courses in physical geography, where I learned about how we interact with physical landscape and that there's a reciprocal relationship that we have with the human and natural environment. And then I finished up actually that first year and learned that they had at Carleton a specialization in geomatics. They called it at the time something slightly different, but essentially geospatial technologies. And you could be one of few students to specialize in that program and really focus on learning a lot about geography, but also about these different geospatial technologies. So geographical information systems, remote sensing, global positioning systems. And it was taking courses in my third year with Dr. Doug King that really piqued my interest in remote sensing in particular. So seeing the Earth from above and seeing, you know, the spatial arrangement of features on the Earth's surface, and to know already a little bit about how they're interacting, that was really interesting to me. And so I pursued advanced level courses in remote sensing, but also in other geospatial technologies. And then, of course, continued learning more about the environment at the same time. So after I finished up my last year at Carleton, I was actually offered a position to teach a course, help to teach a course in second year geospatial technologies. And so I did, which was really quite unusual and very rewarding. And at the same time when I did that, I also connected with a remote sensing specialist at the Geological Survey of Canada. And he was open to me volunteering to work with him. And so I would do a bit of work for him. And in exchange, he taught me more about remote sensing in a real applied way. So I worked on real projects. And that was with Dr. Andy Rentz at the GSC. And that was a really rewarding experience. And it was really Dr. Rentz who said to me, you know, you're really destined to become a researcher, and that I really think that you should talk to Dr. Philip Howarth at the University of Waterloo in the Department of Geography and think about pursuing a master's degree. And so I was quite intrigued by this, and I quickly, you know, went home. And back then we just actually had the internet. And so I think I was able to, the equivalent of Googling him, and looked up Dr. Phil Howarth's work at the University of Waterloo in their Faculty of Environment, and learned he was doing really interesting work in remote sensing of wetlands and forested environments. And so I thought, oh, I could really see myself working with him. So I called him up on the phone and said I'd love to come and visit Waterloo. And so I did that, and I applied at the same time to that program in geography. And, you know, a few months later, learned that I was accepted into the program at the University of Waterloo. And I was absolutely delighted. So I moved from Ottawa to Waterloo, where I then studied under the supervision of Dr. Phil Howarth for my master's degree in environmental studies and straight on to my PhD. In my PhD work, I looked at focusing on mapping and monitoring wetland ecosystems using remote sensing technology. And I primarily focused on looking at airborne and spaceborne data, but we also got out into the field, fought off black flies, and, you know, did a bit of species identification in terms of wetland plants. And we looked at mapping and monitoring wetlands basically in southern Ontario. And as I was wrapping up my thesis work for my PhD, I started to really think seriously about, obviously, an academic position at a university in Canada, ideally. And fortunately for me, a position was advertised at Brock University at the time in the Department of Geography. And when I read the job description, it described me perfectly, right? So I applied for that position and learned soon after that I was shortlisted for interview, and I was hired starting July 1, 2003. So that kind of summarizes, I guess, my educational path.
So you mentioned that your initial research interests were wetland ecosystems and monitoring the change. Aside from those, are there any other applications of remote sensing that you would like to investigate further?
That's a great question. I do have interest primarily in mapping, monitoring wetland ecosystems, and to a great extent, forested environments as well. And I'm interested in particular as of late, especially in looking at urban forests, but I'm also very much interested in mapping and monitoring forest fires, right? So think about, you know, pre-fire conditions where we might actually be able to predict where we may find fire or forested areas that are prone to fire, or active mapping and monitoring active fires, the fire extent, and then even post-fire. I have a lot of interest in that. The Fort McMurray fire in particular made me think a lot about how remote sensing could be used to help that, you know, mapping out that active fire. And indeed, of course, satellite imagery and airborne and even drone technology was used to fight that fire. But I have a lot of interest in forest disease, for example. Mountain pine beetle has been a problem out west. In addition to forests, though, I'm also very much interested in water resources. If we think about how, you know, I see water as the new oil in a sense, that it's a resource that really needs protection. And we have some significant issues to address in terms of water quality. And we can think to Lake Erie, for example, but also, you know, in terms of algae blooms and algae growth, but also think about flood extent. And these are all very timely topics, right, that we're dealing with flooding in the north end of St. Catharines, for example, in Port Dalhousie, and how we can use remote sensing technology to map flood extent and think about, you know, where we need to place resources for flood events, short-lived events, but also over time to map out flood events.
Could you tell us a little bit about the courses that you teach at Brock University?
Yes, I teach actually courses at the both undergraduate level and at the graduate level, the master's level in particular. And the courses that I teach at the undergraduate level are primarily courses that at the second year level introduce students to geospatial technologies. So what are the technologies? How can we make use of those technologies? So it's very much an introduction to the technology. When I get into the third and fourth year courses, especially in remote sensing, then we start really learning a lot more about, you know, software packages that we use to analyze the data that we get from airborne, spaceborne, or even in situ remote sensing devices. So in situ means at the site. So handheld devices that we can use in remote sensing. So students learn about those technologies and those devices, but then we take it a step further. We start talking about, you know, what kinds of questions can we ask that remote sensing technologies can help us answer, right? So we're not talking about tools looking for a problem. We're talking about real world environmental problems that remote sensing technologies really can address. So students start to learn, you know, what questions do we ask, what remote sensing devices are appropriate to answer those questions. And then we talk at length about, you know, how do you acquire these data sets that you need to answer these questions we have? How do you use software packages to help you answer those questions? So how do we analyze those data? How do we extract information that's meaningful to us from those data? And then how do we communicate that to an end user? So for most people, remote sensing doesn't really come to them intuitively, right? You really need to have some understanding of what the technology is to then be able to use it in a meaningful way to answer a particular problem, right? So students are walked through the process from problem definition to how do we, you know, collect those data, analyze the data, extract information, and then provide that to an end user. And we do that primarily for them to be more informed or better informed about the decisions they need to make, right? And so that's what students learn in third year. And then in fourth year, they're given a bit more freedom to decide what questions they have that remote sensing can address. And then they engage in real projects that they want to pursue. And they take a project from start to finish and present a report at the end of that course so that they get some kind of practical experience. And ideally, that includes engaging with an outside partner. Whenever we can, I like to bring in either another researcher that I'm collaborating with on a project that students can also work on. And from doing that, I've actually been able to publish a paper with an undergraduate student to sort of build up these connections through these courses that I'm teaching. Some of them are just directed readings courses, but they result in some cases, the students working on projects and academic peer-reviewed publications come out of that work, right? Which I think is what we want our students to experience, is that full life of a project. And then how do you actually disseminate that, or how do you report the results in a meaningful way that other people can then make use of that information? The graduate courses that I teach that I'm really excited about as well are in geography. I teach some statistics courses and some advanced topics in geospatial technologies, which I think are a lot of fun. And we often have great students in those courses from diverse educational backgrounds, which makes it really fun for the students, I think, and for me, because then they learn a lot about, you know, different academic backgrounds. And we kind of come together to discuss common themes in geospatial technologies and in remote sensing in particular, for example. But I also teach courses with the Environmental Sustainability Research Center's graduate program, the Master of Sustainability. And those courses involve thinking about working with third parties outside of BRAC, for example, the Government of the Northwest Territories, where we get the students to work on real projects. And the course that I'm thinking about in particular is called Problem Solving in the Environment, where we can have a mapping component to those courses as well, but we engage with a third party, we identify a problem that they would like to see solved, but maybe they don't have the resources or the time to dedicate to that specific project. So in that course, we have the students work as a team, as a group, and we teach them about project management and how to manage a project through problem identification all the way to presenting the results to an end user. And I found that to be a quite rewarding experience. And that course in particular was co-taught with the director of the Environmental Sustainability Research Center, Ryan Plummer. And so he's got these connections with the Government of the Northwest Territories. He's got quite a few different connections across the globe, which allow us to engage in these kinds of projects where students work with people outside of BRAC, either in government or in non-government. You know, some of our students have worked with not-for-profits, for example, like Geospatial Niagara, where, again, they're getting practical experience using geospatial technologies to address real problems, local problems or regional problems or even beyond that.
So students coming into BRAC University, they're first year geography students, and they end up taking the second year introduction to geospatial technologies. What are the core skills that are taught to those students going forward that will serve them going further into other remote sensing courses?
So students at BRAC, fortunately, don't need to be geography majors to take the second year course in geospatial technologies. It's called an Introduction to Geospatial Technologies. And I really like that because I think that geospatial technologies can be used in all kinds of applications, from agriculture to urban planning to forested environments, wetland ecosystems, to even thinking about autonomous cars, right? So that course, I like that geography students can take it, but of course all students at BRAC can take it. And the students basically sit in a lecture for part of the course. I bring in guest speakers as well, but there's also a lab component. And in that lab component is where they use software and hardware. So, for example, a handheld global positioning system, and they actually go out into the environment and collect data, with the technology. And then they learn, okay, you know, why are we collecting those data, those GPS coordinates, for example? Why do we collect those data? How do we then bring those data into a computer and analyze those data with the software package, right? And then add attribute information to that and look at mapping those data points. So for example, students could go out into the field and collect information about where trees are located on campus, or perhaps, you know, what trees are maybe showing signs of disease, or what's the species type, you know, thinking about studies of biodiversity, for example, or just thinking about mapping trees in an urban environment where it's important to know where the trees are and where they're not, where other trees maybe need to be planted, especially if you need to remove trees because of disease, which is something we've done here in St. Catharines. So students really get hands-on experience, practical experience, where they learn about not just remote sensing and work with remote sensing data sets. They also learn about geographic information systems. How do we bring different layers of information about the environment? So, you know, land use, land cover information to maybe some satellite data, as well as some GPS coordinates that are all overlaid onto one map that we can then analyze those data. And I teach students, how do we actually do that data analysis piece? And then how do we present the results in a meaningful way to the end user? So it's important to think about, you know, how do you actually produce a map? So my impression is that people are being led to believe that you can pick up these technologies and simply use them. And to some extent, you can. And mobile technology has facilitated that. And Google Earth has gone a long way to facilitate that. But you also have to have an understanding of how to actually represent or visualize those data. And a background in geography really helps you understand that, right? And how to actually produce a map and, you know, to understand the importance of scale in looking at a problem, or is there a problem, right? If you change the spatial extent of the study site, does that change the results that you extract from your data analyses or not, right? So it's really important to understand scale. It's important to understand, you know, how to communicate with a map.
So being a former student in your class a couple years ago, that second year Introduction to Geospatial Technologies was actually one of my favorite courses I've ever taken at Brock. I always knew I wanted to be in geography, but I think it just opened me up to all of the realm of possibility where this could actually go. And that conjunction of technology and geography and all the applications that could come from that really piqued my interest and made me realize that I was in the right place and there was a light at the end of the tunnel. So on that note, have you ever had students taken that second year class that have been in other programs and have decided to actually switch majors because of it?
First, let me say that it was a delight to have you in my class. And I really appreciate you saying that, because I don't always get to, you know, talk to students long after they've taken a course, right? They graduate and they're gone. So it's really nice to hear that. And I have heard students say that before, which I think is a lot of fun, because I, of course, am passionate about geospatial technologies. And I see that there are so many applications of the technology. So that course in particular is so much fun for me, because I get to talk about all of these other applications that are beyond my primary research interests. And I would say that I have had students tell me that they have come from different majors at Brock, and because they took that second year introduction to geospatial technologies, that they did decide to switch their major into geography, which is wonderful to see, because they're really pursuing what they're passionate about. I share their passion, and it makes it a lot of fun for me to teach them then in future years, because you just see that they're really passionate about the subject matter, and I love that.
I think it's amazing. Someone like you can help a person realize a dream.
Aww.
Aww, we need to have a group hug, man. Wow, I'm feeling the love here.
So extending from RJ's question, this is a two-part question. It's, what do you feel is the most satisfying aspect of your career, and what is the most challenging aspect?
I would say the most satisfying aspect of my career is working with students like RJ, for example, right? Having students really come to realize that they're really passionate about geospatial technologies and they really value taking these courses. They're spending a lot of money to attend university, and to see them then come out of that and be gainfully employed, for example, is a really nice part of my career. And to then continue a relationship with them, because that's not the end point for a lot of students. They get a job that may not be the job that they have for life. So I get to not only enjoy watching them develop from second year to fourth year, for example, which is quite a bit of development happens during that time at an age where students in that second year class, you know, can be 18 to 80. Or the majority are about 18, 19, 20. And by the time they're coming out of the program, they're just a little bit older, but so much learning has happened. And I really enjoy watching them go from, you know, that sort of nervousness of second year, they're starting to understand how things operate at a university, to then watching them build their confidence and knowledge to fourth year, where they're starting to think about graduate work at the university, or maybe at a different university, or they're thinking about a college program, or they're thinking about applying to jobs and working. And it's a lot of fun to watch that development unfold before your eyes. That's an immensely rewarding part of my career. That's what often gets me up in the morning, is thinking about that. It's such a rewarding experience. The other aspect of my career that I find really exciting is opportunities to work with colleagues beyond the, you know, within the university, beyond the university, but also colleagues in government and even non-government, not-for-profit, for example. I continue to help develop projects or work on existing projects, for example, with Geospatial Niagara. And I find that also really rewarding.
So I'm of the understanding that you recently received an award from the Canadian Association of Geographers at their annual conference that was held at York University this past week. Can you give us a little bit of information about what that award was for? And congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Yes, I was nominated by a few academics for the Canadian Association of Geographers Award for Service to the Profession of Geography. And what that means is that I made valuable contributions in terms of the training of students, doing research, geographic research, and educating or training graduate students, as well as my service to the profession and as a member of the association, that I have served the association as well by chairing organizing committees for the annual meeting of the Canadian Association of Geographers. We hosted that meeting back in 2014. And I also organized the Ontario Division of the Canadian Association of Geographers with the East Lakes Division of the American Association of Geographers back in 2007. So I've been an active member of the association, and they acknowledge my contributions to the association, but also to the profession of geography. So that was a real honor to be nominated and to be selected as the recipient of that award. So I formally received that award just this week at the conference at York University.
So that was the most rewarding. Now, what's the most challenging?
The most challenging part of my career is that I don't always get to pursue all of the projects I'm interested in working on. Often when you have funding, you're dedicating your time to very specific projects and you don't always get to pursue all of the projects that you would like to work on. And of course, as academics, we have to balance research with our teaching and the service component of our job. So you really have to manage your time very carefully. I know the public perception is that professors have summers off, for example. But the reality is we don't. And, you know, I'm not at all complaining about my career. I really am happy that I have the career I do, and I consider myself to be immensely fortunate. But it is also a very demanding career, as it should be, right? So at times I feel it's a little bit challenging that, you know, I can't always pursue all of my interests. But I'd say that's about it. Most of my career is quite rewarding and enjoyable.
Are there a lot of women in the field of remote sensing, or is it male-dominated? And how would you go about encouraging girls and young women to explore the field of remote sensing?
It's a really interesting question. I would say if we look across Canada, I can think of both men and women that are in the field of remote sensing, or even in geospatial technologies in general, but specifically remote sensing, I can, top of mind, think of lots of women that I know that work for government, for example, two female academics in remote sensing. I think that over time, it's maybe become a little less dominated. Male dominated. The natural sciences in the past have tended to be perhaps more attractive to men than women. I'm not entirely sure, but I see a change in the last, say, 5 to 10 years, and in some cases have taught, for example, my third year remote sensing class, where it's predominantly females in the class. So it's hard for me to say at this point now, especially, you know, 2017, I think there are a lot of men and women interested in remote sensing, and I entirely understand why. So it'll be interesting to see what the years ahead bring, but I do like encouraging the younger generation, both girls and boys, to think about studying geospatial technologies, or at least learning about them. And neighbors of mine can tell you that I've often sat out on a nice sunny afternoon like today and tried to talk to their kids about, you know, something called remote sensing, and there are satellites overhead. And, you know, I've often found they take great interest when you sit back and have a conversation with a younger person, male or female. Often they have lots of questions for me, and I find it's really fun to just talk to them and explain to them some of these satellites you can even see at night. So at a campground, for example, late at night, you know, I've often pointed these satellites out to my nephew or my nieces and said, you know, that's an Earth observation satellite that's overhead. And I've also thought it's really important to get out into schools, elementary schools, high schools. And again, I'm getting back to these competing interests I have as an academic, right? That I see part of my position at Brock University being getting out into the community and doing research, but also in education. So going to a local school to explain, you know, what my job is as a professor at a university, and then also teaching them about geospatial technologies and what I do and why we do it. And so some of the ways I try and encourage boys and girls both to take an interest is to just have these casual conversations. That, you know, I have a son, so it makes it easy for me to find younger kids that might, you know, listen to what I have to say about these technologies. Just the other day, I had my son invited a couple friends into the house, and they were studying for a map quiz. And so they sat around the kitchen table, and we started talking about mapping and, you know, where are the different oceans located on a map and what are the names of the continents. And it was really fun to see their excitement in learning about, you know, where are the Great Lakes and what are those Great Lakes and how were they formed. And we started having a lecture there in my kitchen, which was particularly fun for me. And I later distributed maps with little blank spots for them to fill in the different names of the continents and oceans. And I am pleased to report that at least two of them got an A+ on that quiz.
So what are you looking forward to the most about the realm of remote sensing?
What I'm looking forward to the most is to have the data collected by remote sensing devices to be more accessible. So we talk about open source data sets, having data accessible to those who would not otherwise be able to get those data. And I understand that, you know, these data are very expensive, but over time it would be really nice to see those data sets become available for government, non-government, to have access to those data.
And our last question of the interview, has there been an application of remote sensing techniques or even geospatial technologies in general that has taken you by surprise that you would never even have thought that that data could be collected that way?
That's a great question. I have seen a few websites where they list the top 100 uses of geospatial technologies or even the top 1,000 uses or applications of the technologies. I've seen many, many, many different applications of the technology. The one I find really intriguing today, and I think because I see a future in autonomous cars, and the use of remote sensing technology in the autonomous car is something my students, especially in fourth year, have taken an interest in. I know the University of Waterloo's done a lot of work. Rick Mercer even had an episode where he drove, if you will, an autonomous car. And so I see that and think, you know, that might be a really interesting development of the technology down the road.
All right. So at this time, I'd like to thank Marilyn Jalano for coming in to the studio and talking with us about geospatial technologies and her career as a professor at Brock University. And with that, we wrap up season one of the GeoNiagara Radio Show. We've had 6 episodes, and they've been all exciting to do. And we're looking forward to next season beginning in September. So thank you, Marilyn, for coming in. It's greatly appreciated. There have been a few educators in my career, in my life, that have had an impact on me. I can count them on one hand, and you are definitely one of those educators that have impacted me. So thank you again for coming in for the episode.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an absolute delight, and I'm honored to be here and to be having this wonderful conversation that I think could go on for some time. But I'm glad that this is the last episode, and I really do thank you for having me in.
Thinking of pursuing a career in the field of geography or tourism? The Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University offers 3- and 4-year bachelor's degrees and a geography graduate program, each with several study options. At Brock University, you'll get an excellent education with hands-on experience through internships, study abroad programs, co-op, labs, seminars, and more. Explore the world through your studies. Come to Brock and experience the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies today. Check us out at brocku.ca/geotour.
This brings us to the end of season one of the GeoNiagara Radio Show. We are extremely happy that we lasted 6 episodes. I'm quite happy about that.
It's a big feat for us.
The GeoNiagara Radio Show actually started as an internship project for the fourth year geography and tourism studies internship program. And it was an idea that I had about a year and a half back, and thought it might be a good experience trying to put this together. So has it lived up to the hype, RJ?
It has definitely lived up to the hype. I have been learning so much more than I'd ever thought I would learn. I never saw myself in radio or working at a radio station, so this has been a complete change of pace for me, which has been awesome. And I think I've just gained a whole new set of skills and made a lot more connections than I ever thought I would, and that's super exciting to me, and I'm excited to see what could happen in season two.
Yeah, season two is going to be starting in September, and I think the idea for September, it'll be like a back-to-school episode. I have some irons in the fire, as it were, about possible interview subjects and interviewees, and we'll look forward to bringing that to you when the time comes.
So considering that this is our last episode of the season, we thought we'd give a little recap of all six episodes and each of the lovely show guests that we had the pleasure of meeting in the studio or joining us on the phone. So first we had Chris Fullerton from the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University. And Chris was a great first episode. He talked a little bit about the Niagara region and where we are and the Geography and Tourism Department itself, all of the changes that have been happening lately, such as the merger of geography and tourism into the very successful year that they've had, being one department instead of two.
I think what really sticks out for me in that interview, one of the bigger takeaways is just the number of students that come into the program from other programs at the university. You know, Marilyn touched on it a little bit in her interview, so it was nice to see that sort of tie-in at the beginning of the season to the end of the season.
Mm-hmm, that's a great point.
Episode 2 featured Dr. Charles Gritzner from the University of South Dakota, and he is the author of the essay, What is Where, Why There, and Why Care? And I think the takeaway for me in his episode was just how passionate he was, or is, about the subject of geography. And the fact that he's in his 80s and that he sounded 18 was really, really cool. You could hear the passion in his voice for the subject.
Yeah, Fritz was an amazing guest, and I'd like to hear his voice again on our show. I think he should make a reappearance.
Yeah, I'll have to get in contact with him, see if we can record something. Episode 3, we had Alex Morrison from the Regional Municipality of Niagara. He's an urban planner. And Alex was a really cool guest to have discussing issues that are happening in Niagara and some of the projects that he's working on. But also, it was good to have a viewpoint from someone who's brand new, as it were, to the industry. He has just finished his undergrad and he's now out of the working world. So it was really good to get his impressions of being an urban planner.
After that, on episode 4, we had Warren Price, who was an urban designer from Toronto, who has had a big hand in designing a lot of the buildings and landscapes at Brock University. So it was really exciting for us to learn about the whys and whats of some of the buildings and that we have crossed through every day.
I think the takeaway from Warren's was just how involved the campus planning is. Like, I would never have imagined that there would be a campus planner. Like, it makes sense to me, but you don't think of it in terms of university being like a small city that needs to be planned in the same way as a city would or a town would. So that was really neat to sort of a diversified urban planner.
After that, we had Travis and Tyson from
Principal Point Geospatial Solutions based out of Hamilton.
And they were talking to us about the field of remote sensing, but also in respect to the use of drones and UAVs. And we learned a lot about where drones and UAVs are going in the future and what the rules and regulations are concerning the public and the use of drones.
Yeah, I think the challenge with sort of the more commercial use of UAVs and drones within Niagara is basically just the sheer amount of paperwork that you need to file. I mean, if you could find some training opportunities for UAVs, I would highly recommend it. Especially those high school students that may be listening to the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Looking, even myself.
Looking for a marketable skill, as it were, as you head into university or college, that if you could pick up a pilot license for UAVs, it might not be a bad thing to invest in right now because it can only help you in the future to sort of differentiate yourself from the pack of other graduating students of field that you get into. We hope it's geography, though.
As we have spent 6 episodes trying to convince you of that.
Yes. And finally, we had Marilyn. The passion came through. Definitely.
Absolutely.
And I think she was a fitting season finale guest. I think it's going to be hard to top next year. We're going to have to sort of give some thought to that. Maybe we'll have her back for season finale of season two.
Perhaps.
Let's see what's happening. But we look forward to bringing you season two starting in September. And again, if you want to contact us, and we very much encourage you to do so, you can tweet at us. Twitter handle is @GeoNiagara. You can find us on Facebook at the Geo Niagara Radio Show. And as always, send us your show ideas, send us your guest ideas. If you do something in geography or environmental science or remote sensing or geology, earth science, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, contact us. And we're always looking for show guests, and come in the studio and be our guest and share your passion with the world. So for myself, Darren.
And myself, RJ.
I'm getting a little teary-eyed here.
Oh.
Thank you for joining us for season one of the Geo Niagara Radio Show. And we hope to see you and hear you and engage with you for season two.
Thank you all so much for listening.
Have a good night.
You have been listening to the Geo Niagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.